Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name is Jamie Waste, and I'll be your host today. We'll be speaking with Mary Catherine Martin and Bjorn Deely about their Wildlife Wednesday presentation entitled Our Wild Heritage. We're going to get an update on Extension Saturday events at the Cooperative Extension Service from Darren Snyder. Johanna Herme and Sasha Radulovic will be here with a preview of the presentation at tonight's Alaska Design Forum, and we'll learn all about what's going on up at Eagle Crest. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more today on KTOO News Juno. And if you missed the live show, it's also available at 4 on KRNN and online at ktoo.org.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Chickasaw and Choctaw Nations of Oklahoma entered into a settlement with the federal government Tuesday over the government's alleged mismanagement of tribal natural resources and funds. As KGOU's Jacob McClelland reports, the settlement is worth $186 million.
The tribes filed suit in 2005, alleging the government failed at protecting tribal assets when it sold over 1 million acres of tribal land between 1908 and 1940. Under the settlement, the tribes agreed to dismiss their current lawsuit for $186 million. They also agreed to forego future litigation. Speaking at a ceremony at Choctaw headquarters in Durant, Oklahoma, Chickasaw Nation Governor Bill Anatubby said the settlement will allow all parties to move forward.
And I truly believe this agreement is reasonable for everyone concerned and allows us to avoid another potential at least 10 years of litigation.
It's the fifth largest tribal trust settlement in U.S. history. U.S. Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell called it a step forward towards healing the relationship between the federal government and the Choctaw and Chickasaw nations.
It recognizes there's been a very painful history between Choctaw Nation, the Chickasaw Nation, and the United States government. But it also recommits all of us to moving forward in good faith.
Under the settlement, the Choctaw Nation will receive nearly $140 million, while the Chickasaw Nation will receive about $47 million. For National Native News, I'm Jacob McClelland in Norman, Oklahoma.
In Lawrence, Kansas, students from Haskell Indian Nations University organized a 3-mile march Tuesday from their campus to City Hall. Students worked to get the city of Lawrence to recognize the second Monday of October as Indigenous Peoples Day. Rhonda Lavaldo reports.
Over 200 people joined in a walk to support a proclamation for Indigenous Peoples Day. Haskell Indian Nations University students organized the event to have the city recognize the importance of their culture. Lawrence Mayor Mike Amix agreed as he read the proclamation.
Now, therefore, I, Mike Amix, Mayor of the City of Lawrence, Kansas, do hereby proclaim Monday, October 12, 2015, as Indigenous Peoples Day in the City of Lawrence.
However, Haskell student Barbara Wolfen said the original document they submitted asked that every year following would be recognized as Indigenous Peoples Day, and the wording was changed to only recognize this year.
I'm excited, but yet I'm disappointed at the same time, because back in 1992, the city did approve American Indian Day for that year, and they mimic that today by claiming October 12, 2015 as Indigenous Peoples Day, when our original intent was to make it every year after.
Haskell Alaskan Tlingit student Grace Denning stated that even though it wasn't for every year, she still helped to organize the event next year.
Although we did get this year's October 12th for Indigenous Recognition, I really wish that they would have recognized from here on out, because that is one of the biggest reasons for this march that we did. But we'll just have to keep coming back every year until they do. We'll keep fighting.
Reporting from Lawrence, Kansas, I'm Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
Canada's largest First Nations organization is holding an open forum today in Enoch, Alberta, as the country prepares for the upcoming federal election. The Assembly of First Nations Forum will focus on First Nations priorities. The group says all federal parties have been invited. The public forum will feature discussions and a session on maintaining momentum throughout and beyond the federal election. Education, poverty, and unsafe drinking water conditions in First Nations communities are some of the issues leaders have recently addressed. National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Perry Bellegarde, is urging First Nations people to get out and vote during the October 19th election. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Darlin Gold, Jim O'Hologuyut, Bijikaya Ghat, Gusfok Fim, Gui Fim, Shua Wat Digni, Jalang Nako Rathatakainagun.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
A short run goes a long way for NAMI Juneau. Our second annual Extra Tough 5K and 1 mile fun run is taking place Saturday, October 10th, 10 a.m. at Riverbend Elementary School's covered playground. You have to be extra tough to face mental illness. So grab your extra toughs and run or walk as we raise awareness during National Mental Illness Awareness Week. Visit NAMIJuneau.org or call 463-4251 for more information. See you at the start line Saturday, October 10th.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 7th of October, 2015. It's the birthday of the poet Diane Ackerman, born Waukegan, Illinois, 1948, who blends science and literary art. Her first book of poems entirely about astronomy, called The Planets, A Cosmic Pastoral, best known for her book A Natural History of the Senses, came out in the 90s. She published a memoir called 100 Words for Love about her husband, a novelist, Paul West, who in 2005 suffered a stroke and suffered immense damage to the key language areas of his brain. He'd had a huge vocabulary, and he was reduced to a single syllable, mem. Took him years to recover the ability to speak. Diane Ackerman, who wrote, "It began in mystery, and it will end in mystery, but what a savage and beautiful country lies in between." It's the birthday of the Danish physicist Niels Bohr, born in Copenhagen, 1885, who theorized that atoms were composed of a small, dense nucleus orbited by electrons, and came up with the idea of complementarity, that things like light or electrons can have a dual nature. And it was on this day in San Francisco, 1955, Allen Ginsberg read his poem Howl at the Six Gallery, a reading to promote the art gallery as organized by the poet Kenneth Rexroth. Gary Snyder was there and Jack Kerouac. Ginsberg was the second to the last to read. He started at about 11 o'clock at night. He was 29 years old. He'd never taken part in a poetry reading before. Started off very quietly, but as he read, he found his rhythm, took a deep breath before each of the long lines in the poem, and then said each line in one breath. Read the whole thing, and the audience went wild. Here's a poem for today by Sue Ellen Thompson entitled Wednesdays. Along with his two surviving sisters, the five of us divided up the week so that one of us would call my father every night at dinner time. My night was Wednesday, and after we discussed the weather, and he expressed amazement that New Hampshire could have record-breaking rains while Maryland clung stubbornly to drought, he'd ask if I had spoken with my daughter lately. I'd say no, that it had been a month, or that I'd left a message and she hadn't called me back, and he'd say what a shame that was. He didn't understand how silence could descend between a parent and a child. With that, he'd reach across the kitchen table with his knotted fingers for her latest postcard, then for his magnifying glass. I marveled at the torrent of her sentences when her communications with me were so sere and brief. When he was done, I'd say, "I'll talk to you again next week," to which he responded cheerfully right up until the end, "I hope so." Wednesday is a poem by Sue Ellen Thompson from her collection entitled They, published by Turning Point Press, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by TIAA CREF, a global financial company dedicated to delivering financial outcomes that matter. TIAA CREF, created to serve, built to perform. Learn more at TIAA.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for KTOO comes from Mendenhall Auto Center, serving Juneau for 28 years and featuring Dodge, Chrysler, and Subaru vehicles in a remodeled showroom. More information at MendenhallAutoCenter.com. We'll be right back.
What's the tall white one out there?
There's at least two great egrets on the far end of the marsh out here.
Yeah, look at the stilts. Look at the stilts in the display thing here.
Wow. Oh, this is really nice if you want to see the egret, because you've got Canada geese and pintails and ibis and Franklin gulls walking around on the ground for scale.
This took place in spring, but year-round. Why is bird watching so rewarding? Here's bird guide Harry Fuller.
Well, one of the things I always say to beginning birders is, first of all, it's free. Second of all, it's anywhere and everywhere that you are. It's almost impossible to think of a place if you can go outside where you're not going to run into some kind of bird. And it's remarkably entertaining. It's easy to do. Start with two or three species that you see regularly and study them. Figure out what they're doing to make a living. How do they get food? Are they around all year? Do they disappear? And you start to get a rich appreciation of what's going on around you all the time. But if you don't stop to look at it, you just miss it. But once you start watching, you really appreciate the beauty, the complexity, and just the wonder of what's going on in the world around us.
Really nice light on those avocets.
Oh, they're pretty. Yeah. Look at those cats.
And that rusty color is only present during the breeding season.
Oh, it is.
By late fall, they'll just be black and white again.
Really?
Join us for more at birdnote.org.
Well, regrettably, it looks like our first guests today are not going to be in the studio, but I'll briefly mention the event that's coming up, and that is the 2015-2016 Wildlife Wednesday season is beginning tonight, and the program tonight is entitled Our Wild Heritage. This will be held at Thunder Mountain High School in the library this evening at 7 o'clock. It's for free. It will be featuring two local writers and both outdoor adventurers, Mary Catherine Martin and Bjorn Dealey. And I think many people have probably read their columns in the Juneau Empire. So they'll be making the presentation this evening, and they're going to be talking about outdoor adventures in Southeast Alaska, the Yukon, and the Arctic. They're going to be sharing some photos. And they're also going to plan on reading some of their some brief excerpts, both published and unpublished. And they're going to talk about how experiences with wildlife affect their creative process for both nonfiction and fiction writing. So that's this evening. It's the opening Wildlife Wednesday for this season. Again, at 7 o'clock. It's at Thunder Mountain High School in the library, featuring Mary Catherine Martin and Bjorn Dealey talking about their writing and their outdoor adventures here in Alaska.
We'll be right back.
comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, offering HydroFit every Tuesday and Thursday from 6:30 p.m. until 7:30, Aqua Aerobics Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. until noon, and Stretch Aquatics Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45. Fall swim schedules are now available online at juno.org/park/rec/pool. More information at 586-5325.
At the next evening at Egan, a history lesson you'll never forget. Assimilation, a play in which a Yupik elder runs a school where the goal is assimilation of whites into Native culture. Presented by Alaska Native storyteller, teacher, playwright, and actor Jack Dalton. Friday, October 9th, 7 p.m. at the Egan Library on the University of Alaska Southeast Campus. Also simulcast on cable channel 11 and live streamed at uas.alaska.edu.
The Juno Arts and Humanities Council proudly presents Rock and Roll Hall of Famer John Sebastian. Sebastian has been thrilling audiences for nearly 40 years ever since the debut of Lovin' Spoonful, with top hits like Do You Believe in Magic, Summer in the City, Daydream, and many more. Sunday, October 11th at 7 p.m. at the Jack. Must be at least 21 years of age or with a parent or guardian to attend. Tickets available at the Jack or online at jahc.org.
And our guests have arrived, so that's good. Much better than me just promoting the event. In the studio, we have two local writers, Mary Catherine Martin and Bjorn Dila, and we also have Patricia Weary. And these folks are here to talk about the very first presentation in the 2015-2016 Wildlife Wednesday season, which is beginning tonight. It's going to be at 7 o'clock, Thunder Mountain High School in the library, and it's for free. So welcome to the studio, all of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It's exciting, new season. So, Patricia, maybe I'll just start with you. Okay. Why don't you just talk a little bit about what this is, what the season is, and who puts it on, and then we'll talk to the two writers here.
So this is sponsored by Alaska Wildlife Alliance, the Southeast chapter. We're the Southeast chapter. And this is our educational effort, and we call it Wildlife Wednesdays. And these folks tonight are doing Alaska animals, but a lot of times we keep it right down to Southeast animals, and it's educate the public about critters.
And is it every Wednesday or once a month?
We do it once a month. It's the first Wednesday of every month, mm-hmm. and we're going to do October through March.
Mm-hmm. And how do you go about deciding who's going to make the presentation or what it's going to do? Do you have that all mapped out already?
Like we already are starting on next year's.
So you just literally take it one at a time and decide who might be available or...
What are some of the issues that mm-hmm. we'd like to hit that might be more timely? Who we're putting too much pressure on? We keep re-inviting them back, so we don't want to wear them out. And we look at who else in town is borrowing them. Fireside Chat, for instance. These are great resources, mm-hmm. and they can get tired.
Right. Right. So, Mary Catherine Martin and Bjorn Dila, welcome to you both. Have you done this before? Have you been part of this presentation, this showcase before?
No.
Neither of us have ever presented at a Wildlife Wednesday, but we've been to a number of them and really enjoy them.
Mm-hmm. So I think many listeners probably are familiar with your columns in the paper. That was how I recognized the names right away. So I'm curious, just a little bit of a preview tonight. What are you going to do? For people who show up, what are they going to hear, see? What are you going to talk about?
Well, we're going to talk about how wildlife influences our writing and our sense of place and identity. And we're going to show a lot of pictures we've taken. We're definitely not experts in wildlife photography or writing, but we love all three of the subjects, and they're all kind of intertwined for us. So we're going to read a handful of pieces that hopefully illustrate how wildlife is key to understanding place and our sense of identity, at least. I think we're going to do maybe three short excerpts of nonfiction, maybe one brief excerpt from Mary Catherine's novel that she's working on.
And we're also going to talk about some of the many trips that we've done together, which we also write about for the paper a lot.
So are you both, tell me about your backgrounds here. Are you both writing on the side, or are you writing as careers? Or, I mean, I'm curious what the backgrounds are here that lead into writing or support your writing or...
Sure, that's actually part of what we're going to be talking about. Bjorn and I met and got together 5.5 years ago now, and he grew up in Alaska, in Juneau, born and raised, and has spent most of his life exploring the Pacific Northwest and the interior and the Brooks Range and Southeast and all kinds of places. And I had spent most of my life loving the outdoors, but also just focusing on writing. And then being together, we kind of shared what we each focus on and
what we were good at. So
yeah.
And are you both hoping to have writing as a career or as the career, or is it something you get? You're like a lot of artists. Most artists, you get to it when you can. And
I think. Mary Catherine makes most of her all of her income via writing, whether it's for the newspaper or freelancing, and I subsidize a decent portion of my income freelancing for a variety of media outlets. But yeah, I think in the best of possible worlds, we would just write whatever we want to write and take adventures and that sort of stuff. But I mean, it's a long-term goal, but you're right, even, Seth Kantner, probably, in my opinion, Alaska's best writer currently. He's commercial fishing. He's doing a bunch of jobs. It's just kind of one of those things that, writing's just one of, it's like, at least for me, I need to have a creative outlet or I go nuts. So writing's kind of become that for me. So
yeah, it's something that each of us would do regardless. And it's great if you make money at it, but it's not a requirement.
It's not the purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So how does the wildlife experience inform your writing? I mean, I don't want to give away tonight's presentation, but in terms of, being a little bit of a hook for people who are listening to maybe want to attend, I mean, what is that? What's at the heart of that for you?
Mary Catherine interviewed Seth Kantner the other day when he was in town. I think he put it really well that he felt writing was almost a debt he felt to the land. And for me and Mary Catherine, our land's inseparable from the wildlife that lives there. And being that we love wildlife, writing about wildlife is in a way a debt, in a way it's a celebration. But basically it's also for myself who I am. I can't not, when I think of, when I go to sleep, I think of a variety of things, including pizza and Netflix, but also... the wildlife that I'm so lucky to have a part of my life. And, for me, Kantner put it best, it's a debt. And, I want this wildlife to be better appreciated by people, entirely, but also just for future generations. I want kids to walk down brown bear trails. I want people to have a chance for solitude. I want, giant herds of caribou still roaming the Arctic. So, at one level, it's a creative outlet, and also it's just kind of like, it's a slight worry, but yeah, it's just, I want it to be there for future generations and just for itself, too. I mean, so.
You two are just perfect to start off this season. Just perfect.
So, Mary, go ahead. Were you going to add to that, or?
Sure. Well, I kind of I write a lot of fiction as well, and one of the big discussions in fiction literature right now is about a sense of place, and that was actually the focus of a Cross Currents event that Scott Burton moderated just a week or two ago, Place in Literature, and it's something that in Southeast Alaska, wildlife is inseparable from a sense of this place. It's just something that's important, obviously, whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction, but that experiencing that, getting the chance to experience that, to get out there and, as Bjorn said, walk on a brown bear trail or kayak, near a humpback whale, is something that gives you a much deeper sense of the beautiful place that we all call home.
So, last question, and, so Bjorn, some of your wild adventures that we've read about in the Empire, is Mary with you on those, or?
Mary Catherine's with me on many of them.
Or does she decline to go?
I don't do negative 40 degrees. So.
You're really missing out.
So sometimes you are together on this.
Oh, and we're going to just talk tonight, I guess, for any listeners about, for the most part, basically, yeah, entirely just about trips that we've done together. And that's, you know, something I'd like to point out is that you don't have to be, you know, an Arctic explorer to appreciate, you know, to have these amazing experiences with wildlife. I mean, you can walk 5 minutes out your back door. I mean, you know, the spring migrations on the Mendenhall wetlands can be just unreal for birds. And you have these magical moments right off of Egan. And I think that's just something to remember, too. It's not like, you know, it's not a faraway place. It's your backyard. You know, you have access to so much here. So,
Mary, we're going to wrap it up here. Anything else to add on here at the end?
Well, thanks for listening. And, yeah, come out tonight for the Wildlife Wednesday at 7, Thunder Mountain.
Patricia, anything else?
We'll see people. We have refreshments and conversation.
At 7 o'clock tonight, Thunder Mountain High School in the library, Our Wild Heritage, with two local writers, outdoor adventurers Mary Catherine Martin and Bjorn Dila. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Big welcome into the studio, Darren Snyder with the Juneau Cooperative Extension Service. And Darren's been here probably many times before to talk about the different programs that you guys offer here in Juneau and throughout Southeast.
Yep.
So Extension Saturday, the topic?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Jamie. Thanks. Yeah. So we do serve throughout Southeast Alaska. We have two agents, myself and Sarah Lewis, here in our Juneau office. And we kind of had the idea of doing these Extension Saturdays to try and just spread out some of our efforts on a kind of a monthly basis for the community. And these ones are primarily Juneau-based. And so we have a few listings coming up. We have some, it's the beginning of the 4-H year, and so we do 4-H youth programs here in Juneau. Some of the ones that people are mostly familiar with are like our cross-country skiing, which is going to be coming up again here, as well a new luge program.
Ooh, luge in Juneau.
Yeah,
sounds new.
Yeah, it's a luge sledding, and so Doug Sandvik is our chief volunteer on that, and it's been a dream of his. And so that's the way it works with 4-H is we try and collaborate with caring and interested and available adults who want to share something with the community. And so Doug signed up as a 4-H volunteer and is offering that luge program. And so if any of the stuff that I mentioned here, I'm going to kind of go through a few things to the listeners. If anything's interesting to you, then please call our Juneau Extension office. And it's a 523-3280. But if I just keep on some of the 4-H youth and family track, we have a continued effort to try and pull people together who got inspired by Chautauqua coming through this summer, where they're, you know, the idea of being able to have a community of people who are doing some revelrous activities such as juggling and song and dance and even oratory kind of activities. It's a, if you look up New Old Time Chautauqua, if you missed that this summer, or if you're interested in doing that, we're trying just to be a host for that, for anybody who wants to do that and create a space for that. So if you're interested in doing Chautauqua type activities, and in fact, I've included that in a community school class, if you want to look up the community schools bulletin around that. And we also have kind of a stemming from our 4-H camp that we do each summer. We have a teen leadership group. And so high schoolers who are interested in doing and planning for some different activities, some adventurous outdoor activities primarily, but others will be considered. So our group has been of a teen leadership 4-H outdoors group has been looking at setting up a cross-admiralty canoe trip, something more local. There's some folks interested in stand-up paddle boards and doing some adventuring around, where maybe traversing all the way from the Auk Bay area through the wetlands during high tide all the way to Juneau, downtown Juneau, doing some kind of, you know, wild.
Sounds like fun to me. Well, sounds like fun for some people.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, just kind of if you know a teen out there who wants to kind of get into a little bit of trip planning, water safety, all kinds of outdoor skills related stuff, and to take on some leadership roles and doing that both for themselves as a team group, but also with the potential of sharing it with others in the community. We have also coming up with that same teen leadership group. They've eyeballed the Martin Luther King Jr. weekend in January to plan for doing a winter survival weekend where they're building themselves some shelters. We're going to assume that we can find some snow, build some snow caves, and that kind of adventuring. So if you know anybody who's interested in that teenage, then send them to us. And on to the extension weekend.
Well, and real quickly, yeah. I'm just thinking for somebody maybe who's listening or just tuned in, you rattled off a bunch of great information, and you're going to hit on a few of these extension Saturdays. But just real quickly, Juneau Cooperative Extension Service, who are you guys? What do you do? Because obviously you're spinning out all these opportunities for the community, but just a little bit of background.
Yeah, okay. We are part of the University of Alaska, and we're specifically housed at the Fairbanks a campus, just because historically that's where the National Extension Program has been housed, is in the land-grant universities. And the Extension Service in Alaska and throughout the nation is a way of bringing the university to the people. And so we are part of the University of Alaska, and we bring these services to the communities. And for youth, it's through 4-H. For any of the canning and preserving and gardening and growing and agriculture support, you know, it can be adults, it can be youth as well, and so all those kinds of activities. And well, one of the activities that we had last year and for a few years running was our Juneau Chicken Summit, where we have those activities. We had a whole weekend dedicated to people who are interested in raising chickens and raising fowl, and so that's one of our Saturdays. But that's way off in April. Coming up a little bit earlier than that is going to be doing some outdoor adventures with youth, and that will be in November. Then on to kind of these preserving side of things within Extension that Sarah Lewis offers, a fermenting and pickling class coming up in December. And in fact, if you want to learn about what's called preserving for the holidays, she's offering a class that you can schedule through and sign up through community schools on. And so, again, that's also in December. And then in the turn of the year, there's going to be lots of other activities that we offer each month. So I'll kind of hold off a little bit, but one more plug is that if you know somebody who's interested in doing the Master Gardener program, that's going to come up again. This is a cycle to come up in January and February to start off. That.
So you folks are providing services year-round, and for people who are listening, any one of the topics that you went through that maybe piqued their curiosity or mm-hmm. interest, obviously you guys are online, there's a phone number, yeah. What's the best way to check in with you guys to learn more?
If you call that 523-3280, then we will definitely give you information. We also have a pretty solid Facebook presence now. If you look for us on the GNL Cooperative Extension Facebook, we're posting there nearly daily with lots of information. And again, if you don't see something you've heard about, then just give us a call and we'd be happy to help you out.
Sounds great. Anything else you want to mention before we switch gears here?
I think that's good for me. So just give us a call, and we're the University of Alaska, you know, at your service. So come and use us.
I love the phrase taking the university to the people.
Yeah.
That's a great slogan or phrase or however you guys use it. So Darren Snyder of the Juneau Cooperative Extension Service, thank you very much for coming in to a Juneau Afternoon.
You're welcome, Jamie. Thank you.
And in the studio, our next guests are in town. Their presentation will be this evening. It's part of the Alaska Design Forum, Programs in Architecture, Art, and Design. The presentation will be this evening right here at the KTOO building downstairs in the 360 studio space. Starts at 6 o'clock, and we have three people in the studio. Evelyn from the Alaska Design Forum is here, but the two featured artists or architects are Johanna Herme, is that
right,
correct?
Yeah.
And Sasha Radulovic.
That's pretty good.
Is that pretty good?
Yeah.
Is that good enough? So welcome to Juneau.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Is this first time in Juneau for you guys?
Absolutely. First time in Alaska, really, and it's been such a pleasure.
And you've been to Anchorage and Fairbanks?
Yeah, we've done 3 days,
uh-huh.
Three flights.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we've been here almost 2 hours.
You're lucky you've made all your flights so far.
Yeah.
That's right.
So you folks are Winnipeg-based, and the name of your firm is 5468796. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's our business incorporation number.
So for starters, I'm sure everybody asks you this, how did you come upon that name for your corporation?
Well, we're imports from Europe. I'm from Helsinki, and Sasha's from Sarajevo, and our last names are pretty tough to pronounce, and we thought that wouldn't be very memorable. But more importantly, it's actually really so that people who work with us really work with us, not for us. And so there's a sense of it being equal around the table.
Mm-hmm. So your work, you are architects, and I went online and saw a few of the examples of your work in Winnipeg. And I should say that you're award-winning, and it's pretty prestigious, some of the awards that you folks have received. I don't know if all of your works are based in Winnipeg, but the images I saw, I just thought, this is the kind of thing when I'm in an urban setting and I'm driving along and suddenly I notice a building and I turn and I want to slow down and then stop and really look at it, or I'm walking around a city and all of a sudden I realize something just pops in the urban landscape and it's a completely different design. That's kind of what hit me first.
Right.
So I'm curious. It's so hard to describe architecture on the radio, but that's what grabbed me when I saw your work. So talk about your work. People who come tonight to the forum, talk about your work. What are you going to talk about tonight?
Well, I think that maybe one starting point would be, and we found a lot of similarities actually between Alaska and Winnipeg in a sense of it, both places being isolated and having to kind of really invent their own culture. And I think that's where we can draw those parallels. And I think a lot of our ambition comes from the fact that, one shouldn't settle and you should always try to find the new next thing, perhaps. And in our case, the city was very much sort of a bargain basement attitude, and everything had to be cheaper and done the way that it was always done. And what we've been trying to pursue is trying to find another kind of language within that is really based on the local economy and based on what materials are available and what you could do. And then if you follow all those rules and make sure that the project is affordable, then you can squeeze a little bit of architecture out of it.
Yeah, we occasionally talk about things like architecture against ambivalence, and maybe that's what you sort of what resonated with you when you looked at the few images, is that the idea that architecture should be our background, we think that, but also should not leave your emotions flat. And that's sort of the stuff that we get into when we work on projects.
So how did you get into it? Did you both grow up thinking, I'm going to be an architect or I'm going to be an artist? I mean, how did you get to this place where you're designing these incredible, forms and structures and some art pieces, it seems to me? I mean, some of these are almost like art installations. Mm-hmm. How did you get here?
Right.
I think it's one of those funny things that life takes you places. Like, another one is obviously when we were kids, planned to be in Winnipeg in the first place. We're both European imports and have different stories. Mine is one of being a high school exchange student and only picking Canada as a place to go. And then the family there took me somewhere in the middle of Manitoba, in the middle of nowhere, in a town of 8 is where I spent a year.
Eight? Yes, 8.
No, 0.
Smaller a year.
Yeah.
Smaller than Jim.
Yeah. And so then through sort of life occurrences, that's where I ended up in the architecture school in Winnipeg. And then Sasha came as a war refugee from the former Yugoslavia, and we were in the same class.
Mm-hmm.
And then got into the architecture. But I think we've both known for a very long time that
I just realized that it's been 40 years. I'm 43. At the age of 3, my dad was an architect. So at the age of 3, that's my first memories. Or my parents probably telling me the first time they actually showed us that you like to draw, right? And so it started then.
And you've been drawing ever since?
Yeah. Well, it's always been absolutely the only thing that I ever wanted to do.
Yeah. So for people who come tonight, just give a thumbnail on what you're going to present.
We're going to talk about projects, so explain why we do things that we do, but we're also going to talk about things that have to do with design activism, which I think is appropriate to Alaska Design Forum, and the things that we've tried to do, not only in our city. Our city is about 750,000 people, but in the province and then in Canada as well. Things have tried to put architecture back into our cultural production, feeling that architecture is about people that inhabit the places, the people that live there, the people that work there, and that we should be attached to it much more than just thinking of them as piles of concrete and bricks and metal.
Yeah, and I want to add that quickly that also that, design is everywhere. It's all around you. Architecture is all around you. And we can either choose to do that well and then have a better quality of life as a community, or we can choose not to pay attention to it and then perhaps not have that kind of soul food that we all need to thrive and be happy.
And last question, how do you get work? You're doing extraordinary work. So are you seeking out opportunities in an urban setting to do something? Are people just coming to you and you're picking and choosing, or is it a combination?
Oh, it's a combination.
Yeah.
And there's always the left field when you don't know. The phone rings one day and there's an opportunity out there. But I think what's common to all the jobs that we do get is that we try to see them as opportunities, that no job is too small or too difficult, but there's always something that can be done, and that's what we try to hold on to.
Mm-hmm. And Evelyn, maybe last question will be with you. So how do you choose? How does the Alaska Design Forum figure out who to ask to come up? And
oh, gosh, it's actually a really long process. It starts several years before anyone shows up, and we're continually checking out what's going on around the world, going reading blogs, going to forums, conventions, just keeping on track with what's going on in the world of architecture. And once a year we have a retreat. We come up with a theme that will be 2 years hence. That's when we start our fundraising and planning, and come up with a list of people that we think, usually a list of probably 30 or 40 people, frankly, and then start looking at their work, calling them, watching them on YouTube, and you know, winnowing that down to a group that we think meets the theme and is diverse. We want to be diverse in disciplines, diverse in places in their careers, diverse in where they come from in the world. So that's kind of how we sort of shape every year. It's a really fun process.
So that's tonight, the Alaska Design Forum. It's at 6 p.m. right here at KTOO, downstairs in the 360 studio space. Johanna and Sasha, thank you for your talent and your creativity. Hopefully someday I'll get to Winnipeg and I can actually see it there. But thank you for bringing it to Alaska, too, and talking to Alaskans.
Well, thank you for having us over.
Thank you very much.
Time to talk about Eagle Crest. Matt Lillard, tell me more.
Yeah, well, we had a nice couple days here. It's been cold up at the mountain.
Yep.
We had to turn the heat on in the lodge.
Ooh, there's a sign.
Yeah, you know, we try to save some money and keep it cold, but when computers stop working as well, we have to turn it on. So that's a good sign, you know, first week of October and turning the heat on already. So, yeah, winter's coming. We're getting ready. Yep. You know, the two big things happening right now. First, tonight is our second ski film bar night at Louis, 7:30. So this is a program we're running, kind of classic. I'll say old, but it's really not that old, you know, starting in the 90s, ski movies.
Mm-hmm.
So last week was Teton Gravity Research's Uprising. This week we have Warren Miller's Steep and Deep from 1995. So these are some great classics. They have some great footage in them. They're a lot of fun to go hang out. We've got prizes and other things going on at Louis, and some specials from the Chum Bucket for food and things like that. So come on out and get excited about winter. That's every Wednesday night from now through mid-November. It starts at 7:30 at Louis. And then the next big thing, and the real big thing, is this Sunday, October 11th, is the deadline for the PFD pass sale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so these are by far the best rates of the season on passes. To remind everyone, we dropped the rate for all the passes after last season by anywhere from 15 to 20%, depending on the age. So an adult can get a pass for $399 up until October 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, it's 9 days to break even. Of skiing and riding, and that's an amazing deal.
Yeah, that is an amazing deal. And what's the deadline again?
October 11th, Sunday.
So right around the corner.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's coming right up now. So, you know, we obviously realize it might be a little hard for people to jump in, but, you know, we're looking forward to a much better season than last year, and, you know, we plan on operating in about 90 days and be able to get more than your money's out of it and support the ski area and come on out and have a lot of fun this year.
And between now and then, the mountain, there's always activity. I know that I get up there on occasion and I walk the road and get up onto the ridge, and I think it's quite accessible still. I know you want snow to start hammering down on the ridgeline soon, but in the meantime, people can go up to the mountain and enjoy themselves.
Yeah, exactly. There's some great hiking trails, and the mountain bike trail is, you know, the part of it is up and going, and with this great weather, we've had a lot of people come up, and we'd like to see even more, so come on up and join us, and check everything out at skijuno.com, and check us out on Facebook.
Matt Lillard, Eagle Crest, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Good to see you.